I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Chances are you've seen this ad on TV featuring actor Stephen Dorff standing on a beach. It's called Take Back Your Freedom.
I'm Stephen Dorff. I've been a smoker for 20 years, and I just found the smarter alternative. Blue e-cigs. Blue lets me enjoy smoking without it affecting the people around me, because it's vapor, not tobacco smoke. That means no ash. And best of all, no offensive odor. With Blue, you could smoke at a basketball game if you want to. And how about not having to go outside every 10 minutes when you're in a bar with your friends? The point is, you can smoke Blue virtually anywhere. We're all adults here. It's time we take our freedom back. Come on, guys. Rise from the ashes.
Electronic or e-cigarettes are growing in popularity in part because of slick media campaigns like this and the claim that they're safer than regular cigarettes. The FDA has warned about the possible unknown health risks of this new product and is deciding about how and whether to regulate them. So are e-cigarettes a helpful tool to help someone reduce, even quit smoking? Do they make smoking look attractive and risk-free and encourage someone to start? We have two guests who have joined us on Radio Times. Here in our Philadelphia studio is Andrew Strasser. He's associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine, where he is the director of its Biobehavioral Smoking Laboratory. Andrew Strasser, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
And joining us by telephone is Michael Siegel. He's a professor of community health services at Boston University School of Public Health. And Michael Siegel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Well, thanks for having me.
Andrew, let me start with you, and I just want to make sure our listeners know what it is that we're talking about. What is an e-cigarette, and how does it work?
Well, an e-cigarette is a relatively new device that's being introduced in the U.S. market, and it essentially has three pieces. There's an inhaler piece, a cartridge that holds the nicotine, and then there's an atomizing device which allows sort of the nicotine to be inhaled or sort of be sprayed. In addition, there's a power source, a battery that's usually rechargeable, that allows this action to take place.
And we have this new word vaping as opposed to inhaling. But it is inhaling, yes?
The mechanics are very similar. I mean, the person's putting it to their mouth, similar to a cigarette. They are drawing on it to extract the nicotine. So it's very similar behaviorally to a cigarette. So you're...
But there's no tobacco. I mean, that's a significant difference, yes?
That is a significant difference. This is a nicotine cartridge. There's no tobacco.
Michael, I've seen it referred to as an electronic nicotine delivery system. Anything you want to add to our description before we get into some of the nitty gritty?
Well, I think it's a good description, and I think that the whole point of the electronic cigarette is that it's designed to mimic a regular cigarette. The closer it is to the experience of smoking a cigarette, the more effective it's going to be in helping get people off of cigarettes, because the problem with nicotine patches and nicotine gum is that it can replace the nicotine, but it can't in any way replace the experience of smoking, all of the behavioral, the physical and the social stimuli that are part of the smoking addiction. So the very thing that makes the electronic cigarette a promising for smoking cessation is that it actually substitutes for not only the pharmacologic aspect of the addiction, but also all of these behavioral aspects as well.
But Michael, can we say that e-cigarettes are safer than tobacco cigarettes?
Well, there's no question that they're safer than regular cigarettes. Tobacco cigarettes contain more than 10,000 different chemicals, including more than 60 known human carcinogens, and we know that they cause more than 400,000 deaths a year, whereas the electronic cigarettes deliver low levels of two carcinogens that we know about, and that's basically it. There's a couple other chemicals in there. There may be some very low, long-term effects, but there's no question that these devices are much safer than smoking regular cigarettes.
You want to add to that, Andrew, as someone that has been doing a lot of research on smoking?
Sure. So Dr. Siegel's absolutely correct in that sort of in a one-to-one comparison. I mean, it's not combusting, so you're not creating a lot of the hydrocarbon-associated problems, the nitrosamine-based carcinogens, which are some of the most potent in cigarette smoke. So the bigger concern for some is sort of the what level of analysis you use. And so if people are exclusively switching to e-cigarettes versus commercial conventional cigarette, it seems very, very likely that you'd have some health benefits because you're not ingesting those carcinogens. The concern that I have is that we do see people co-using, and so they are using e-cigarettes in times when they can't smoke because of restrictions or other choices, but they still continue to smoke several cigarettes a day, some mm-hmm. cigarettes a day, and so they reduce their number of cigarettes they're smoking, but they're not exclusively switching over, and so they're still doing some harm from the conventional cigarettes.
But if you found that people are saying, I want to quit smoking, I've tried many, many times, I've tried the gum, I've tried the patches, I'm going to try e-cigarettes, and this is going to get me off of tobacco and perhaps off of smoking entirely.
Sure. So you do see some current smokers who look at this as an opportunity to quit smoking, and some are successful. That's certainly supported, but there's others who sort of take this approach that perhaps if I use e-cigarettes and cut down on my cigarette smoking, that's somehow beneficial. And the danger is that they end up in a situation where they're continually ingesting the nicotine from the e-cigarettes as well as several cigarettes a day. And we've seen in some of the work in our lab when people are reduced to just a few commercial cigarettes or burning combustible cigarettes, they'll smoke them more intensely.
Oh, really? A deeper inhale?
They'll take bigger puffs. And so they're still extracting quite a lot of nicotine from those cigarettes, as well as the tar or the carcinogens and other things that are associated with disease. So they're still getting a significant dose.
Michael Siegel, let me go back to you. And even going back to the ad, obviously we just heard the audio, but I think a lot of people have seen that particular ad. It does make, it certainly looks like smoking. I mean, I think certainly that's part of the ad there. But do you think someone, and I'm thinking about a 14 or 15-year-old, looks at that ad and thinks, oh, you know, smoking looks pretty attractive. It's relatively risk-free. Perhaps I'll start smoking.
Well, we know that that's not happening because the data clearly show that youth non-smokers are not regularly using these products. Several surveys have been done, and right now there's no evidence that this is happening. However, I would note that youth are very unpredictable, right, and you never know what's going to catch on. And so it's very important that we monitor this closely to make sure that electronic cigarettes don't catch on. Right now, what's attractive to youth is the real thing. They like to do the real thing. They don't like to do fake things. When you talk about sneakers or jeans, they want to wear the real designer jeans. They want to wear the real brand name sneakers. They don't like fakes or imitations. And so, you know, right now that's the situation with electronic cigarettes. But things can change, and youth are unpredictable, so we really need to monitor this very closely.
Well, and just picking up on that, and I'm old enough to remember when there were ads on television for cigarettes, and you know, doctors were telling us it was all good for us, and there were not the smoking warnings from the Surgeon General. But Michael Siegel, when you look at some of these ads, they look remarkably like the ads that were that are now banned on television or in magazines, precisely because of the dangers of smoking.
Well, there's a very interesting catch-22 going on, which is the reason why these ads look the way they do, and that's that these companies are not being allowed to tell the truth about their products. It's a very strange situation because when we think of regulating advertising, we think of the purpose of regulating advertising is to make sure that it's honest. And now we have a strange situation where with electronic cigarettes, where by law, by regulation, companies are forced to lie about their products. And the strange reason for this is because the companies can't tell the truth, which is that these products are intended and designed to get people to quit smoking. And why can't they say that? Well, the reason they can't say that is that they're afraid that if they make that claim, that the FDA is going to try to regulate those products as drug devices, not as tobacco products. And, of course, the regulations are much more stringent, and they would have to do clinical trials and all sorts of studies, and essentially the products would have to come off the market. So these companies are in a catch-22 situation where the only way they can advertise the cigarette is the way Blue does, which is which everyone just heard, which is this is an alternative to smoking. This is something you can do in places where you could, you know, you may not be allowed to smoke. Those are the kinds of benefits that they can talk about, but they can't talk about the real benefit and the real purpose and the real reason why people are using these products and the reason why they were designed in the first place, which is to get people off the most toxic consumer product on the market, which is regular cigarettes.
Well, let me give you have a quizzical look on your face, Andrew Strasser. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I do agree that there are some potential benefits to using an e-cigarette as a device to move toward quitting. However, you know, some of the studies that have been done so far, you know, have very poor retention rates, and meaning even for 2 or 3 months, people weren't willing to exclusively switch to these. Now, we see it in our lab. We hear about it in the news that you know, a lot of people, you know, in studies of with an N of one, personal anecdote, that they were able to use it to quit. And that's wonderful. Anyone quitting smoking, whatever way you can do it, that's a wonderful, wonderful approach. But there is a segment of the population that is using it as a way to, you know, well, I'm going to use this and I promise I'm going to quit down the road. And so we're in a scenario where we do need to have the science available for what are the long-term effects of using this, using it with other products, some of these other sort of long-term population questions.
Michael, let me go back to you and just picking up on what you said about companies not being allowed to be honest. But we are talking about, you know, the companies that have been involved in tobacco cigarettes, and I think their track record on honesty is a bit questionable. I just want you to expand on what you meant there.
Well, what I mean by that they're not allowed to be honest is that they can't tell consumers what the real purpose of their product is, which is absurd. Any company that's making a product is able to tell their... I'm not aware of any other company other than electronic cigarette companies in the country that are not allowed to tell consumers what the actual purpose of the product is and why it was designed. This is an absurd situation because electronic cigarette companies can't actually tell consumers, hey, this is what the product is for. The product is designed and the sole purpose of it is to get people off regular cigarettes so that they won't die and that they won't get diseases. And that's the primary reason why people are using these products. The majority of people who are using these products are using them because they're scared to death, literally. They're fed up with the fact that they can't quit smoking. They know it's killing them. They know it's going to kill them. And this is a wonderful alternative. And they're doing it because they want to get off regular cigarettes. It's absurd that the companies can't tell their potential consumers, hey, this is what the product is. Blue cigarettes should have a commercial that says, hey, your cigarettes are killing you. We have a way of helping improve your health. And they can't say that.
Well, hold on to that thought. That's Michael Siegel. He's a professor of community health services at Boston University School of Public Health. Also with us is Andrew Strasser. He's an associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine, where he's the director of its biobehavioral smoking laboratory. We're talking about e-cigarettes in this hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Keswick Theatre supports WHYY. Coming to Glenside's Keswick Theatre, French comedian God Elmaleh on September 12th. German singer, songwriter, and star of Das Boot, Herbert Grönemeyer, Sunday, September 15th. Fran Healy and Travis perform on September 19th. And Hugh Laurie and the Copper Bottom Blues Band explore America's musical roots on October 25th. Tickets and info at keswicktheatre.com.
PRI's The World brings you voices from around the globe.
I never felt, you know, that being Muslim and being an Indian are two different things.
It's your daily source for international news and a gateway to cultures beyond our borders.
When we say somewhere over the rainbow, it's here. It's in Buenos Aires.
I'm Marco Werman. Join me right here for the next edition of The World. Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, three major military cases have played out in military courts this summer, an important time for someone who teaches the subject.
We've sort of had the World Series of military justice this summer between Dr. Hassan's case, Staff Sergeant Bale's case, and Private Manning's case.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about some of the controversies associated with e-cigarettes or electronic cigarettes. And again, our guests are Andrew Strasser and Michael Siegel. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Michael, let me just pick up on, and I asked you this before, but let me just ask you again. You're saying the real purpose of e-cigarettes, and many of them now being promoted by Reynolds and companies that we associate with tobacco cigarettes, that their real purpose is to get people to quit smoking. But it seems to me if you've lost so many of your customers because they've either frankly died or given up smoking, isn't the purpose of this campaign to get people to smoke e-cigarettes?
Well, when you say smoke e-cigarettes, essentially you're talking about quitting or reducing smoking. In other words, the patterns that we've seen in using electronic cigarettes is that electronic cigarettes are used as a substitute for tobacco cigarettes. I'm not aware of anyone who has an increase in nicotine consumption due to using electronic cigarettes. In other words, almost by definition, if you're using electronic cigarettes, you're going to be reducing your overall consumption. And it's true that not everybody is going to switch completely,
right,
but the overwhelming percentage of people who are dual using, in other words, using electronic cigarettes and still smoking, have still greatly cut down on the amount that they smoke. So I also want to point out that it's true that there are three cigarette companies that are marketing these products, but the vast majority of these companies, more than 250 of the companies, have nothing to do with big tobacco, and clearly their incentive is to, one might be cynical and say that the tobacco companies really don't want you to quit completely. They want you to just start using both. But even with that cynicism, the bulk of the companies out there have nothing to do with big tobacco, and they truly are only going to make money, or they're going to make more money if you switch completely to electronic cigarettes.
Well, let me go back to you, Andrew Strasser. I mean, should we think of e-cigarettes as the same as not smoking? I mean, it isn't tobacco, but it is nicotine.
Right.
And some other chemicals.
Right. So it is not cigarette smoking. And if we can say that we have strong epidemiologic data that says people are exclusively using this, then we've gone a long way to improve the public's health. But studies out of the UK, which have had e-cigarettes a little bit longer than us, one study only saw about 1 in 8, so 12.5% were able to abstain for 2 years. We're not smoking any cigarettes 2 years after the fact, and so the little bit of data that's coming through, and these studies do take a long time. We need to really get a sense of how the population is using them in their daily lives, not just for short studies. It's important to understand how they're using them, and are they in fact using them indefinitely? Are they eventually relapsing? Are they still smoking some cigarettes in places that they can? And so, until we know that for sure, I think we need to be cautious about sort of how much we approve of these.
Let me go back to you, Michael Siegel, and even looking at the ad campaign from e-cigarettes from Blue, basically saying that you can smoke in many places where traditional cigarettes aren't allowed, meaning what, the workplace, restaurants, I mean, all the places where people are out by the dumpster smoking, that e-cigarettes really opens the door to people smoking wherever they want?
Well, I think that this is not the way I would like to see electronic cigarettes advertised. I think it's really unfortunate that they have to resort to that level to advertise the product. But I want to emphasize that the reason that they have to resort to that is that they can't tell the truth. They can't simply come out and say, look, we know that most smokers, we know that 80% of you want to quit because you're concerned about your health. And now we have a product that for those of you who have failed with nicotine and other replacement and other methods, which have a 90% failure rate, we have an alternative product that is helping many people. Maybe it will help you. That would be a great help you to quit. That would be a great way that I would love to see these products marketed, and that's the way they should be marketed. You know, you don't see nicotine replacement commercials saying, you know, you can use nicotine patches in bars, or you can use nicotine patches as an alternative to smoking. You see commercials saying, this will help you quit.
Right.
And that's what we should be seeing for electronic cigarettes. We should be seeing ads that say, this could help you quit. And I can't blame the electronic cigarette companies for that, because they're not allowed to do that. And I think that what I'm hoping that the FDA will do is send a very clear guidance to companies when they issue their regulations saying, look, we recognize that these products can help many people quit smoking, and we're going to allow you to tell the truth to consumers.
Well, and I know the FDA is trying to figure out what to do about e-cigarettes, but anything you want to add to that, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Well, I think just the point that some of these medications that people use to quit have undergone numerous rigorous clinical trials where you know they can make the statements of cessation based on a significant amount of data.
Like
nicotine gum patches, spray. There are two so those are the nicotine-derived FDA-approved medications. There's two non-nicotine compounds, but they've all gone through some rigorous evaluation to make those claims. And so, you know, I certainly would support if e-cigarettes had, you know, the significant data behind it that it helped people to quit, then by all means, you know, help people quit.
But is it because we're talking about a relatively new product that there just hasn't been the time for the kind of rigorous research you're talking about?
That's a big part of it. I mean, we're still at the point where we're trying to figure out what's in it. And so, you know, we have been saying, well, this seems very safe. There's some nicotine. There's some vehicle. So propylene glycol and vegetable glycerin that helps sort of the nicotine move into the mouth when you're vaping. But then there was just a study this week out of France that found small levels of acrolein and formaldehyde, which are two, you know, known harmful compounds that are in cigarettes, that are in conventional cigarettes, and that they're finding it in this as well. Now, you know, I've only been able to access part of the study because it was reported in French. But you know, this type of scientific discourse is important to be evaluating these products in different ways. So on a one-to-one basis, different varieties, because as Dr. Siegel mentioned, there's about 9 or 10 versions of this out now. We have to evaluate the cartridges. So in one study, there were the difference in the nicotine that was available in the cartridge compared to how it was labeled. Was quite different. And so there's some production standards that also, when people think about regulation, they're thinking about sort of narrowing people's options. But you should think about it in another way as well, and that regulation is going to properly inform you. It's going to have the information out there in an honest way. And so it's important for people to know that if they think they're buying a 1 milligram nicotine cartridge, that in fact they're getting something very close to that. We expect that when we buy over-the-counter medications. We should expect that in anything that we purchase.
Would you agree with that, Michael Siegel? Then we'll get to our callers.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the great benefit of regulation is that consumers can have confidence in what they're purchasing. And in this case, when you have over 250 companies making a product, it's important that consumers understand that any company you buy from, you're going to get a consistent product, that you're not going to have one company that sells nicotine that's labeled a certain way but has different amounts in it. There are certain basic quality control standards that all cigarettes have, and so I absolutely agree that we need regulation, and that the focus of that regulation should be the types of things that Dr. Strasser is talking about. You should know that when a cartridge is labeled at a certain amount of nicotine, that it actually has that amount, and particularly if it says no nicotine, it really should have no nicotine in it, and various other basic standards that all manufacturers should follow.
Well, and should it be the company's responsibility to disclose what is in their product?
Oh, absolutely. I think those are basic standards that you know, that all consumers should have that kind of knowledge, and regardless of the company.
And that's Michael Siegel, again, professor of community health services at Boston University School of Public Health. Also with us, Andrew Strasser, and he's associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine, where he is the director of its biobehavioral smoking laboratory. We're talking about e-cigarettes, electronic cigarettes, and they're growing in popularity, fueled in part by images of stars and hipsters and B-list actors like Stephen Dorff puffing on them. And we're talking taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. If you've smoked e-cigarettes, we'd like to know about your experience. If you are a smoker, we'd like to know about your struggles, perhaps your struggles, hopefully your struggles to try to quit. And we're curious about your response to the advertising campaign associated with e-cigarettes. Let me get Greg from Medford, New Jersey to join us on Radio Times. Greg, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. My name's Greg, and I quit smoking with an electronic cigarette 3 years ago. Right. It was August 10th of this year. It was 3 years. And Dr. Michael Siegel and his excellent blog post that he makes regularly about e-cigarettes were actually one of the things that convinced me that e-cigarettes were far safer and that I should use them to quit. But I have read Dr. Strasser's piece in the New York Times, and I had two questions on that.
Sure.
You and the other columnists denigrated e-cigarettes by implying that e-cigarettes only come in flavor so as to attract children. I quit smoking thanks to watermelon and Ecto-Cooler flavored e-cigarettes, and I don't regret that. Am I right in judging your New York Times column as endorsing a ban on flavored e-cigarettes? And then I will quickly do the second question. Dr. Siegel, in fact, has criticized you on his blog for failing to disclose the funding that you've received from Pfizer, which makes pharmaceutical products that compete directly with electronic cigarettes. Will you declare your conflict publicly right now and tell the listening audience what companies that make pharmaceutical products that compete with these cigarettes that you've received funding from?
Greg, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Go ahead, Andrew Strasser.
Sure. So, Greg, first of all, congratulations. 3 years quit smoking is a very important accomplishment. So I just want to congratulate you on that. I think denigrate's a little bit of a stretch. One of the comments that I made in the Times article was that, you know, we do need to be a little cautious about how the flavorings are marketed. We do know with conventional cigarettes that the flavorings other than menthol have been banned under the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act of 2009 because there was evidence that some of the flavorings in conventional cigarettes did make smoking more enticing. It takes away some of the harshness or bluntness when people are starting to smoke, which are, you know, predominantly adolescents. I mean, 90% of current cigarette smokers start under the age of 18, and so we, you know, that's a prone group that we need to be careful to consider. So you know, it's something that we do need to think a little bit about.
And funding.
Yeah, so the second question, so in terms of funding, in 2008, received a grant that was called the Global Research Award on Nicotine Dependence, or GRAND. The funding source of that grant was Pfizer, who makes varenicline or Chantix. The mechanism, if you go online to their disclosure, was they convened 8 world experts in nicotine dependence to independently evaluate the applications that came in from all over the world. And so it was an independent council of nicotine experts to evaluate it. And if you look at the studies that we've published from that funding, none are involved in smoking cessation. That wasn't the objective of the study. And so I do have that funding, as well as several sources from National Institutes of Health, FDA, National Cancer Institute, that fund my research.
And Michael Siegel, anything you want to disclose about funding for whatever research you might be doing or whatever work you might be doing?
Well, the main point I would make is that I have not received any funding from any electronic cigarette companies, nor have I received any funding from any pharmaceutical companies or tobacco companies. So, no, we really don't have any conflicts to disclose.
Okay, fair enough. Let me get Claudia from Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Claudia, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
My comment is directed to Professor Siegel and what his notion is of what the companies are allowed to say truthfully on the air. My understanding as a scientist and a health communications expert is that if, in fact, a company has not demonstrated the efficacy of their product, there is no truth to tell in regard to it being an aid to quitting smoking. At this point, it's aspirational and inspirational. They would like to say that a smoker can use this to help them stop smoking, but if, in fact, they haven't done the clinical trials that he's referring to, it's not that they're prevented by the FDA from making a claim such as that. It's that they're afraid to make the claim because they haven't been able to pull up the evidence to say that, in fact, that's true. So my comment has to do with what, in fact, is truth in advertising.
It's a good question, Claudia. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Michael Siegel, go ahead.
Well, I think there's a couple of aspects of the advertising. I think that they could certainly truthfully say what the intention of the product is. I mean, there would be nothing untruthful about a company saying, the intention, the purpose of this product is to get people off regular cigarettes so that they can help save their lives. That's absolutely truthful, and you don't need to do trials to figure that out. That's just the very purpose of the product. But the caller is absolutely right that if you're going to make claims that this is effective as a smoking cessation technique or device, you have to have evidence to back that up. And so one might argue that right now that evidence isn't there. However, I do think that it's perfectly fair and safe to say that these products have helped thousands of people to quit smoking. I mean, we know that as a fact. There's no debate about that evidence. So I think there's enough evidence out there that these products can be helpful to many people and have been helpful to many people. We just heard from one who have helped them to quit smoking. So I think there are things that can be said with complete honesty that would let consumers know what the real purpose of the product is. But I agree that, you know, one of the advantages of FDA regulation is that they will be able to look at the science and figure out exactly what claims are appropriate based on what level of evidence there is.
Go ahead. We're almost about to break here, but Andrew Stresser, go ahead.
I think it's reasonable that we are getting this growing body of knowledge, but until it's really been scientifically evaluated, you can't make that statement that this is clearly going to help people quit. We do see a growing number of people doing it, but they haven't been closely monitored. We don't know exactly what they're doing. We haven't confirmed that they're in fact smoking. And so, you know, we do see people who claim to be non-smokers who are sort of weekend warriors, that they still consider some smoking not smoking. And so, you know, I am optimistic about e-cigarettes. I think they hold a lot of promise, but we need more data.
You're saying anecdotes are not enough. I mean, in the scientific world, an anecdote is not enough.
Especially if you're going to go on air and try to recruit more people to use your product.
That's Andrew Stresser, and he's director of University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine's Biobehavioral Smoking Laboratory. Michael Siegel, professor of community health services at Boston University School of Public Health. We're talking about e-cigarettes, electronic cigarettes, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Before the rapper Prodigy found acclaim and won a Grammy, he had a tough childhood.
My father was a karate sensei. He would always push me and make me fight people. You know what I mean? He was like, go fight that kid and take a knife with you too. And that's what I did. I would beat the kid up.
It shaped his lyrics and his life. My interview with the rapper Prodigy from Mobb Deep on the next Bullseye from NPR.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, our late night week concludes with Questlove, who leads The Roots, the house band on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. They're moving with Fallon to The Tonight Show. When we spoke, Questlove was writing the new Tonight Show theme and was a little stressed.
Boy, I'm having these nightmares of waking up in the middle of the night.
Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Shock and awe shucks.
Saddam Hussein has gone to elaborate lengths.
Have repercussions for the use of chemical weapons.
Taken great risks to build and keep weapons of mass destruction.
A pretty strong signal that, in fact, it better not do it again.
Does the U.S. have the capacity to shock, awe, or even move the needle in the Middle East anymore? The Syria question, next time on The Takeaway.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Michael Siegel and Andrew Strasser about electronic cigarettes. Are they a helpful tool to help someone reduce, even quit smoking? Do they make smoking look attractive and risk-free? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. We have Janice from Cherry Hill joining us on Radio Times. Janice, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say that I started using e-cigarettes, let's say it'll be 2 years September 1st, but I haven't had a real cigarette. So they did help me quit. And I don't even use the ones that have any nicotine in them, because you can actually get cartridges that are zero nicotine. Because for me, it wasn't the nicotine addiction, it was the actual habit of smoking.
Mm-hmm.
That I was missing.
and by that you mean, Janice, sort of holding the cigarette, inhaling something or other,
exactly.
Blowing the smoke, the sort of habit of it, the behavior
of it. Exactly. Yeah, and I find that even now I use the e-cigarettes less than I was, maybe because there is no nicotine in them, I'm not sure. But, I mean, they definitely did help me quit. But I was a little concerned. I mean, I understand the FDA wanting to regulate them as far as studying them for safety, but I'm a little concerned that with FDA regulation, we may get an extreme increase in prices as there was with regular cigarettes.
And that could be
a deterrent to people.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to toss that first to you, Andrew Strasser, and then to you, Michael Siegel.
Right. So some of the increases in taxes that we see in cigarettes were not really through the sort of regulatory efforts of the Tobacco Control Act. And so I wouldn't foresee that increasing the cost. It's wonderful that you've been able to stop smoking conventional cigarettes. And I think your situation brings up an important point that we made earlier about the fact that you've moved to a no nicotine cartridge. One of the things that would be very important to be able to have strong data behind is that in fact there's no nicotine, zero, and that there's no nicotine analogs. So things that sort of look a lot like nicotine when they enter the body and sort of cause your body to respond in a positive way. It's important to have those standards established so that you're properly informed that you're not getting any nicotine. So that's sort of an example of the types of things that we should be thinking about in the scientific and public health community.
And Michael Siegel, what's so interesting, and as an ex-smoker myself, it's sort of almost like just the behavior that one adopts around one's smoking actions and the sort of rituals even associated with smoking.
Well, that is, I think, one of the things that just hasn't been recognized enough in the tobacco control and public health fields, is that smoking is not just a method of delivering nicotine, although it's extremely efficient at doing that. But there's a whole behavior. There's stimuli. There's the oral fixation. There's the hand motions. There's the seeing of the vapor. There's the smoke. There's the throat hit of the smoke. And nicotine patches and drugs, other drugs, cannot possibly replace that. And I think what vapers find so attractive about electronic cigarettes is that they really do replace the other aspects of the smoking addiction. And I think that's the reason why so many people have been so successful, especially people who failed with their traditional treatments.
Let me get Kristen from Fairmount to join our conversation. Kristen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I wanted to say that my roommate used to be an avid smoker, and he's been using e-cigarettes for probably about 3 or 4 years now. And initially, he would purchase the e-cigarettes that you could find in gas stations that were a much cheaper product, but he found that they were incredibly inconsistent in how long that they would last, and that they never fulfilled their advertisement saying one e-cigarette is equivalent to so many regular cigarettes. They would always die sooner than anticipated, and as a result, he would then have to go out and purchase regular packaged cigarettes. But in the last 2 years or so, he's been going to a tobacco shop outside of Philadelphia that specializes in e-cigarettes, and he can buy all kinds of flavored nicotine and a better product. And although it's probably an initial investment of about $100,
wow,
it's much more reliable, and it lasts a lot longer, and it's helped him keep off of regular cigarettes for the last 2 years. And so I think that these products, if they were more consistently reliable, would probably help people quit smoking much more effectively.
Kristen, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Michael Siegel, do you want to respond to that about, I guess, the need for quality and standards?
Well, I think that one of the reasons why, I mean, what we're seeing now in terms of the effectiveness of electronic cigarettes is the actual, I would argue, the worst case scenario, because it's the early stages of these products being developed. And I think that as time goes on, they're going to get more and more, the technology will improve and get better so that they can be more effective in delivering the higher doses of nicotine that are more satisfactory, so that they can give you an effective throat hit, so that the vapor is strong enough that you really feel something, and so that the cartridges last as long as they're supposed to. They don't kind of fizzle out near the end. And with increasing technology, we're going to see improvements in the product. So, you know, I would argue that the fact that we're seeing such tremendous success with these products in their early stages, when they really are all over the map and haven't been perfected, is a very promising sign, and it suggests that as the technology increases and improves, these could potentially really become very competitive substitutes for the real thing.
Well, and it's interesting to compare that Stephen Dorff ad that we heard, and I think many people have seen, and also some of the ads that have been proposed on cigarettes with, you know, blackened lungs and rotten teeth, all that. Do negative, visually graphic negative campaigns, do they work to help people stop smoking? That's to you, Andrew Strasser.
They do. So, you know, we have some pretty good data on that. There's 56 at last count countries that have adopted some version of a graphic warning label. There was a push at one point to bring those into the U.S. and many of us are optimistic that it'll eventually see the light of day. But they are in terms of prevention. There's solid evidence to say that adolescents are sort of put off by seeing these on a pack of cigarettes, and they think twice about smoking. When you add things like quit now numbers and things like that to give people a resource to try to quit, and even some of the work that we've done in our own lab, where we've been able to monitor how people view these using eye tracking, so sort of a camera that follows your eyes. The people who looked at the most graphic images were the best at recalling what the health warning was several days later. So sort of the health science and health communication science on sort of activating and engaging someone with a graphic image is quite effective.
Michael, be curious about your opinion about some of these ads, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Well, there's no question that the really aggressive anti-smoking advertising campaigns, especially televised campaigns, are very effective in deterring smoking. The CDC recently had a campaign where they it didn't just scare people, but the message was delivered by actual smokers who had themselves suffered health effects. And I think that was particularly effective because it's not like the government or public health authorities telling you smoking's bad for you. It was the actual people, the actual victims, who were saying, hey, this happened to me, look at me. And those are effective. So there's no question that advertisements, especially using modern media, television, it can be really effective. And I think it's a shame that states haven't put more of their money into that. Most of the money from the Master Settlement Agreement is going into just the general budget, and it's a shame that they're not using more of the money for these campaigns that we know are effective.
Let me see what looks like Valerie from Mount Airy has to say. Valerie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. I moved to e-cigarettes from the gum, from nicotine gum, about 4 months ago. And my friends keep asking me, oh, great, when are you going to give it up? And I, quite frankly, don't have any intention of giving the e-cigarettes up. I will smoke it until my last breath. I
really
love them. And my problem is that I'm wondering just how good or bad nicotine, the actual chemical, and the plastic that's in the cartomizers is for a person.
And is it just, you really like smoking, Valerie?
I am hooked. I need a rehab, Marty.
You need a yeah. Well, you're not alone. This is a really difficult habit, behavior to try to quit. But let me see what Andrew Strasser says, and then Michael Siegel.
Well, so I think I really appreciate Valerie's call, because I think it's more difficult to come on and say I'm still doing this. It's much easier to call in with a success story. And so a lot of the most vocal and shared information we get is that, I was able to use this and quit, and we're excited about it. And these people should be applauded, because they're not using conventional cigarettes anymore. But Valerie represent, Valerie, you're not alone. We see this with people coming through our lab where they've transitioned, but they're not ready to quit, and there is a large number out there that are using these as a way to hopefully they're hopeful, they're optimistic that maybe they're not doing something as harmful as a conventional cigarette. And if you're exclusively switching, it's very likely that you are. You're not alone. There's a lot of people that are switching over and not quitting.
And Michael Siegel, what do you think? As Valerie says, she wants to smoke this till her last breath.
Well, first of all, I would say that Valerie has quit smoking, and to suggest that she's still smoking is absolutely untrue. She's not smoking anymore. She's vaping. She's not using tobacco, from what I understand. Let's just assume that she's being honest, and I don't have any reason not to think so. She's being honest and telling us that what she's done is she's switched from smoking to e-cigarettes, and she's using e-cigarettes. And her concern is really whether she should stay on e-cigarettes, whether there's any long-term health effects. And so this is a perfect situation. Valerie's situation is perfect to demonstrate what the dilemma is in public health. You know, here we have a perfect demonstration of what we call the harm reduction debate. Here's someone who has successfully quit smoking using electronic cigarettes. And so the question is she better off continuing to use the electronic cigarettes, or should we scare her and by saying, look, you really haven't quit smoking, you're still addicted to nicotine, and try to scare her so that she decides, you know what, maybe this isn't for me, and she should go back to doing something else. And my guess is that if we were to give people like Valerie the advice, you know what, this product is you know, you really haven't quit smoking completely, you're still addicted to nicotine, this is not a good thing for you to be doing, she calls the show a week from now, she's going to tell us, you know what, I had to go back to my regular cigarettes. And that would be a disaster. The thing that is most important for people who are smoking is to get off those cigarettes. And that is a major gain that Valerie and many people like her have made. And they should not jeopardize it. Mm-hmm. They should absolutely not jeopardize it. And it's like being on a ship and sinking on a sinking ship, and you have a lifeboat. And you jump onto the lifeboat, and somebody tells you, you know, that lifeboat may not last. It hasn't been tested to see if it lasts in the water for 5 years. We don't know how long that lifeboat. It hasn't been FDA approved.
Let me just stop.
If that's your situation, yeah. I would much rather have the person take their chances with the lifeboat than go back on the sinking ship. And that's exactly this situation. We don't want people going back on that sinking ship of cigarette use.
Well, indeed, but the question is, what do we, in 10 or 20 years, what is Valerie's health situation going to be, to use her as an example? And if we don't know the answer to that, isn't that important for a consumer to know, Michael?
Well, we do know the answer. The answer is that if Valerie is like 90% of other people in the population, or 97% of other people in the population, who are just simply unable to quit smoking, she's going to be a smoker for the next 20 years. Mm. That is the most likely scenario. And we know she's going to be diseased. It's not going to be a pretty story when she calls this show if she's still alive in 20 years, if she goes back to smoking. If she continues to use electronic cigarettes, there's actually quite a bit of evidence that in 20 years from now, she may very well have even given up electronic cigarettes. People who, as we heard from the other caller, people who switch to electronic cigarettes, their whole interest in nicotine decreases over time. And so it's very possible that you know, 20 years from now, she would not still be using the product. But let's just take the worst-case scenario and said she was. She'd be a hell of a lot better off doing that than continuing to smoke for the next 20 years.
Well, and we only have about a minute and a half before we have to end our conversation. I'm sorry to say that because we have a lot of callers here. But so what kind of research should we do so that people like Valerie and others can have some confidence that if they're getting off cigarettes or using e-cigarettes, that they are doing something that's not hazardous to their health?
So, and to be very brief, I think there's sort of two lines of studies. One is, how efficacious is this as a smoking cessation device?
If that's really what this is.
Right. Right. And it's important to create the minimum necessary data to test it as a smoking cessation device. The second thing is, and this kind of harkens back to light cigarette smoking that we saw for 60 years, we want to know what's the long-term effects of using this indefinitely. And as Dr. Siegel points out, it's very likely that it's much less harmless than conventional cigarettes. I would agree with that. But we want to know what is the long-term effect of exclusively using this product. And it's a good question to ask because people should be properly informed.
Well, I wish we had the answer to that, but I appreciate the fact that we were able to discuss this in this hour of Radio Times. Andrew Strasser, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Michael Siegel, thank you for joining us as well.
My pleasure, too.
And Michael Siegel, Professor of Community Health Services at Boston University School of Public Health. Andrew Strasser is Associate Professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine, where he is the director of its Biobehavioral Smoking Laboratory. And I'm sorry we couldn't get all our callers in on the conversation. Clearly a lot of interest in this topic. Let me steer you to our Facebook page. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. And we started a conversation there yesterday and certainly can continue it today. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us, though. We'll be right back.